From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 383, recorded live Thursday, August 1st, 2013. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of GesturePad, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Nicholas Zakis about writing front ends on today's web.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And on the Skype, we've got Nicholas Zakis from Box. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. You gave a talk recently that's making the rounds that people are really excited about. And I love it because it starts out, the title is Enough with the JavaScript Already. This is ironic because you're a front end web guy. So what are you telling us? We don't know. Some of us want a server side render. Everyone else is going all front end, all JavaScript all the time. Stop the insanity.
Well, the basic premise is that we tend to be using JavaScript too much. And I love JavaScript. It's my favorite language, and I've basically made my career around JavaScript. So it's not that I don't like it. It's just that I feel like, as with most tools, you have to use it in the right circumstance. And I generally feel like our insane and growing love of JavaScript has caused us to use it for things that are a little bit unnatural. And that is causing problems.
What kind of things are we using it for that we shouldn't be using it for?
I like to say that anything that the browser can do for you automatically, you shouldn't be trying to replicate in JavaScript. One of the most common things is on initial page load, using the JavaScript to render the HTML for that page. Now, it turns out that the browser and the server have actually figured that whole thing out really well. And by us trying to insert into the middle of it, we're actually introducing complexity where there doesn't need to be complexity.
Is that only on initial page load that you're concerned about that? Are you saying in general, the whole render it on the server, create it on the server, send it across the wire, render it on the client thing is pretty well understood, optimized thing, and we're just not using it enough?
Yeah, so the first load is really the thing that I'm most concerned about because that is the initial impression that you're giving to the user. So if that's slow, then the rest of the time they're going to think of that web app as being slow. Mm-hmm. So you want that to be as fast as possible. Later on in the cycle, I think it's less of a problem because JavaScript is really meant for managing the page after it's fully loaded until it is unloaded. And if you want to move things around then I think it makes sense. I personally still would rather go back to the server and get fully rendered HTML and insert it into the web app. But I think there are times where after you have a fully loaded page, it's okay to tweak it in JavaScript here and there. I just don't like to do the entire page that way.
You point out in your slides that a lot of pages, popular pages, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, are almost a megabyte if you ignore gzipping on the wire. It's basically jar files again, except they're just JavaScript and not Java. I mean, are we turning the web into just a series of applets that we move from place, we move like from applet to applet?
It is kind of getting to be like that. And I think it's unfortunate because the web is a really balanced system with between HTML and CSS and JavaScript, and each of those parts are good at very specific things. And I think that it's a shame when we don't use it for that. Like, if you had a child who is really good at violin and said, you know what, you're going to play baseball instead, you're missing out on what could potentially be something incredible. And so the more that we put stuff into JavaScript, I think the more we actually do start heading down that path of becoming more applet-like and even getting to the point of kind of being the same as moving between native apps. You just have all of this code that's executing all the time instead of what the web was really envisioned as at the beginning, which is here's a bunch of data, here's some configuration for it, and I'm going to make this palatable to you.
That seems like there's two webs, though, now. There's the from app to app web, and then there's the from document to document kind of, you know, hypermedia web. The hypermedia web is what Berners-Lee wanted, and the application web is what YouTube and Twitter and Facebook want.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, though, that we start to separate those things out too early in the discussion. Because a lot of times I'll be talking with people and they'll say, like, well, yeah, that totally makes sense if I'm, like, writing a blog site. But if I'm doing a serious web app in air quotes most of the time, then I really can't deal with that sort of progressive enhancement stuff because it's not going to get me far enough along. And I believe that they're actually not all that different. So fundamentally, all any of us are doing are presenting data and then maybe optionally letting people manipulate that data. And how we choose to represent it can actually end up being pretty much the same. Regardless if it's actual text content or it's photo content or it's video content or it's audio content, this is all data that's being transmitted over HTTP, and we need to put it into some sort of format that's consumable by other people. And we can start out with the same basic building blocks to do that, and then layer on additional functionality on top of that. I don't see them as two completely different things.
Why do you think people feel the need to be reinventing or exploring and trying to reinvent stuff so much? I mean, HTTP 1.1 has served us very nicely for a very long time. Angle brackets are working nicely. Curly braces, pretty well. But we've got Angular and Ember and Backbone and on. And, on. And you know, I always say, pick a noun .js, and someone has a reinvention of the way that the application should exist. But it's just text boxes over data. Why haven't we as a community come together and picked something as an application model? We agree on TCP, we agree on IP, we agree on HTTP, but we just can't seem to agree on anything else in the stack.
Well, I think that speaks to our nature. Our nature is more artists than anything else. It's like if you take any two artists aside and ask them how they're going to do their job, they will give you vastly different methodologies about how they're going to go about their work. And part of what drew me to the web and part of why I love the web is because of that artistic factor that comes into it, that there is no one right way most of the time of doing things. And I think that that is actually by design, completely intentional, so that we can grow and explore. And I think that we want people to keep pushing the envelope. We want people to say, there might be a better way of doing this. And we've seen a lot of really great things come out of that in the past few years, where JavaScript libraries are actually influencing what came out of HTML5. And designers and what they've been doing in Photoshop were influencing the direction of CSS. And writers and what they were doing were influencing the design of the new HTML5 sectioning elements. And so I think that we're at the beginning of an evolution of this medium, not near the end. And that means that there's going to be a lot of exploration and, quite frankly, a lot of bad ideas before we come across the really good ideas.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I remember working for companies that said, yes, the future of the web is 100% by 100% Flash apps, right? You know, one element on the HTML is just an envelope. You just say, you know, HTML, body, and then you go embed, and that's it. And that's the web. And there was the Java people, and then everyone would argue that, like, pluggable virtual runtimes were what it's going to happen. And then suddenly, Flash, Silverlight, Java, all dead, and the runtime is embedded in the browser. Like, people are, but then even the thing that they eschewed previously, they're going and doing the same thing. Like, you know, Flash sucks, right? We're not going to go and send a whole big binary blob. But if I gzip it and call it JavaScript, then that's totally, like, totally cool.
Yeah, it seems like we go into cycles with the web. Because I lived through all that. And I actually, at one point in my career, was like, yeah, this Flash thing, that's going to be it. Like, that's the end. It's so pretty. It's so neat. And then I started using it And I felt a little dirty. And I said, well, you know, there's a better way of doing that. And I think that we have gone so far with JavaScript that we are now at that point where it's like, well, the web now is basically just a JavaScript delivery mechanism. And that's where we want to do everything. And that was what I was sort of rallying against in my talk, is that when you're just using a thin slice of what the web has to offer, you're actually missing out on opportunities, not just for improved performance, but improved maintainability, improved indexability by search engines, having a more logical way of thinking about the problems that you're trying to solve. We're missing all of that when we say JavaScript has to be the only way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. In your presentation, you use the Airbnb's redesign from an all kind of JavaScript way of thinking to one that has real HTML on that first page load. And you say that you can, you said just now you can kind of restructure applications to be simpler, but wouldn't the kind of logical step be that you'd have duplication everywhere? There'd be the rendering on the server side code, and then there'd be the rendering on the client side code. And then we would start to try to find ways to reuse templates in two places and things like that. Aren't we going to get a split brain and try to do things twice?
So, say that a lot of times when I talk to people about this, they see the end goal as being exactly that. It's like, we are going to write JavaScript and it is going to be used on the client sometimes, and it will be used on the server sometimes, and it will be fantastic because at any point in time, we can just flip a switch and say, oh, this should be server, and oh, this should be browser, and everybody will be happy, and we'll all join hands and sing kumbaya. In reality, there's usually one way that ends up working out best, better than the other way. And needing to go back and forth between client and server using the same code and the same templates, I think is a nice to have and not a need to have. I've been on many projects where I said, like, this is an absolute goal for us, and you know, this is really going to help us in all kinds of different ways. And then ultimately it ends up going that, well, we're just always going to do it in that one way, and the other way we're not going to end up using it at all. And my perspective is that when you have pieces of your web app that are really good at something specific, you should look for reasons to do it that way and only diverge when you absolutely must. So if it's possible to do something in HTML, then you should just do it in HTML without anything else. And then if it's possible to do it in CSS, you should do it in CSS before you try doing it anything else. And if it's possible to do on the server, you should do it on the server unless you really can't. And then once you've exhausted all of those options, then you go to JavaScript. Mm-hmm. That is the thing that comes at the end of your journey rather than where you started.
I see. I've given presentations myself, though, where I've heard people say that, oh, our little web farm of 10 servers doesn't scale. You know, we're going to have to buy more servers. And then we dig into it and I discover that they're doing something like they'll have a list of 100 items on the client, and then they will post them all the way back to the server and have the server do something simple like sort them by column. And they send it all the way back. And I always use that as like the kind of the classic example of don't do that. You have more than 10 servers in your farm. You have 10 plus the number of connected clients that have quad processors. So aren't there things that just really always should have happen on the client, like sorting and filtering and type ahead and things like that?
So there are things that can happen on the client, and those are the progressive enhancements. Those are the things that you can add that improve the user experience without dramatically increasing the amount of code that you need to use. So client-side sorting, yeah, absolutely. All the data is already there and you want to sort it, go ahead and sort it. Type ahead is interesting because sometimes you have to go back to the server in order to match what people are typing. So it ends up being a marriage of both client and server in that case. I think that the step that you keep in mind is that this becomes an optimization step, is that you have a way of doing it that works all the time, and then you figure out that for some people you can do it in a faster way. And that's why I'm not completely against things like using HTML5 history, the push state and pop state. Because I think that there is an opportunity there to say, instead of reloading the entire page, maybe I can just go and grab a portion of the page and insert that in and update the URL. And then if somebody wants to come back directly to that URL, it will still work the way that it seems. Like, I think that GitHub was one of the first sites that I saw that did this in a really beautiful, just really transparent way, where as you were navigating through a repository, you would go from one folder to the next, and the URL was changing, and the view of the folder was changing, but it was not doing a full page reload. It was just pulling in the new middle part of the content that you were looking at.
Right.
However, if you didn't support push state and pop state, then it would fall back to doing a full page reload in older browsers. And that, I think, is the right way to build things. Is you make stuff work without the client-side stuff, and then you look for opportunities to enhance.
I feel, though, that most modern web frameworks don't give you that kind of stuff out of the box. Like, what you're describing feels like common sense, but it's not easy common sense.
Yeah, I guess that's the rub with common sense in general, is that you like to say, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense. And then you come back and say, but I have this thing that I can push one button and deploy, and it does a whole bunch of stuff for me. And that's where I think we fall into the JavaScript library culture a little bit too much, where instead of saying, what's the best way for me to do this? We end up saying, what libraries are already built that kind of sort of get me to where I want to go? And then what do I have to do to feed those libraries and make them happy so I can make my app work the way that I want it to? And I think that's unfortunate. I trace that back to the rapid application development RAD movement, where it was like, well, you know, yeah, we want you to know how to code, but we also want you to get this shit done really quickly.
Yeah. Aren't you basically saying, and I'm putting words in your mouth, but that a lot of people just really have no idea how the web is working?
And oh, absolutely.
That goes all the way down to JavaScript, like the jQueryization of the developer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think jQuery is just one of the latest libraries that has had that effect. And I think it's unfortunate because it's a really fantastic library. But for some reason, when people latch onto it and say, this is the way that I need to work on the web, and then don't look past it, they're doing themselves a disservice. And I think in a certain vein, Backbone has become very similar, where it did the same thing that jQuery did, which was take concepts that were hard to understand and boil them down and distill them in a way that many more people can now access that information. The problem is then that they think that that is the end-all be-all and don't start to look beyond that.
Yeah, yeah. I've done a number of talks and explained to people that the power of the abstraction is just so great that people just don't understand how stuff works. They don't understand how their car works. And then when you say, well, you really got to think about internal combustion, it's a really fascinating topic, they're like, I don't really need to know about that. I don't even have a key in my car anymore. I just push a button.
Right.
That's a sadness, I think. But at the same time, I don't know about you, but I am personally guilty of spackling over all the complexities of JavaScript with jQuery. I probably spent a year and a half ignoring JavaScript because jQuery effectively hid it from me. Were you enlightened enough to have noticed that that was happening, or are you guilty of that too? Did you spend some time hiding from JavaScript?
Well, because I worked at Yahoo for so long, I was much more about using YUI than I was jQuery.
Sure.
And I actually was very cognizant of finding the edges, like where YUI ended, and then trying to extend that edge. So I contributed a lot of code back where I realized that I had reached an edge and that was kind of lousy and I wanted to help fill that in.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really fell prey to that, but I knew other people who did. And I would also end up seeing this a lot in interviews. Would come in and I would ask people how to do stuff and they would immediately start saying, okay, jQuery. And I said, okay, reality check. You're at Yahoo and we don't use jQuery. So how would you do this otherwise? And then they wouldn't know. And that was frustrating for me, and for them, it was a little surprising. Like, but why aren't you using jQuery? Isn't that like the standard toolkit that everybody uses? And the fact is, it's not. Not everybody uses jQuery, even though a lot of people use jQuery.
Like 82% or something. I mean, it's a plurality at least.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people that use it. But are there people who know what to do when they reach the edges of it? And right. Unfortunately, well, I think both fortunately and unfortunately, jQuery has a ton of plugins. So what people tend to do is when they reach the edge of jQuery, they go and they type into the Google jQuery plugin random thing that I'm looking for, and they find 12 of them, and they grab one and start using that and don't even stop and think like, oh, you know, maybe I don't even need a plugin for that. One of the things that I've been doing at Box has actually been to teach people vanilla JavaScript. Say, okay, so there's $.is function. But do you know that with almost the same number of characters, you can do a regular JavaScript thing and it's faster, and then you're actually learning something new? And it's been very interesting for me to go through that process with them, because some of them have come back to me and been like, you know, I'm just now starting to realize that I don't really understand JavaScript. Like, I feel like I get jQuery, but I'm now realizing that there's a lot more to JavaScript than just what jQuery does.
Yeah.
And it's a harsh reality, but I feel like it's part of my job to prepare them for the harsh, cruel world that is out there, where they might not always be able to rely on jQuery, and I want them to know what's going on underneath, because I can take somebody who knows JavaScript really well and teach them how to use a library. But it's very hard to take somebody who only knows how to use a library and then go down and teach them the JavaScript that's running underneath.
Yeah, yeah. One of the really good parts in the middle of your talk, you talk about the 4 JavaScript load times. And I showed a couple of people your talk, and almost universally, the response to that particular slide was, there's 4? 4 different times when JavaScript is loaded, 4 different contexts within which you need to think about, is this the right time for my functionality to jump in? Can you maybe talk a little about those?
Yeah, the 4 JavaScript load times is something I came up with while I was consulting. And I used that to help clients figure out when they wanted to load certain types of JavaScript, because most of them, when I would go in, were loading everything all at once. Sometimes at the beginning of a page, sometimes at the end of the page. And I would walk them through this process of figuring out, what do you actually need? And at what point in time do you need it for the user to be successful in whatever they're trying to do? And so the 4 JavaScript load times are in the head, literally inside of the head tag. And that, you don't want to put a lot of JavaScript in there. It's usually reserved for analytics. Google Analytics recommends that you put their script in there. A lot of other analytics libraries that rely on JavaScript on the client side require you to put your JavaScript file for them in the head as well. And so a lot of times you just can't work around that if you're beholden to these analytics tools. So say, fine, you put those in the head, but you try not to put too much in there. The next time is just before the closing body tag. That's the second one. And that, I think, is where most people end up putting their JavaScript now, largely thanks to Steve Souders and the work that he did on high-performance websites, and saying that if you can put your JavaScript at the bottom, you'll allow the browser to render what has come in on the page already, so the user isn't looking at a blank screen. And I'm hopeful that many people are actually just doing their JavaScript there, and that's fine and not too controversial. The third loading time is after onload. Now, the things that you can defer until after onload is basically anything that is sort of a secondary or a tertiary action that the user might do on a site. And the example that I used in a talk was of an Amazon product page. Is that when you go to an Amazon product page, chances are you came from a search. So you're not likely to be doing another search immediately from that product page, because you just did that. What you're really doing is trying to figure out, is this the thing that you want or not? So you scroll up and down, you read the description, and you decide, yeah, that's really what I want. You click add to cart. That's really important. that should probably be there before page load finishes.
So when you say be there, you mean be available and ready to take user action.
Yep, ready to execute.
Ready to execute, okay.
And now that you've taken care of the most important thing that the user does on that page, now you have the opportunity to defer the rest of the JavaScript until later. And so you may look around that page and say, well, what are like the secondary and the tertiary things that people would do? So maybe they would next do another search because they realized that the search they put in wasn't specific enough. So maybe you just start to load in the autocomplete or the type ahead functionality after onload, because you know they're not going to do it immediately, but it may be the second or third thing that they do. And maybe whatever the JavaScript is that allows you to do that zoom in on the book cover or show you inside pages of the book cover is something that people do as a second or third option on there. And maybe you want that to be there as well. So you make sure that those are loaded after the initial page load is done. So essentially you're kicking these off during window.onload. The fourth JavaScript loading time is on demand. And that's basically the user is doing something that signifies to you that an action is imminent, or at least there's a high percentage that that is going to happen. And that on the Amazon product page is perhaps a wish list. Like when I gave this talk a couple weeks ago, people in the audience actually said, but I use wish list all the time. But for me, I don't use it all that often. And so maybe I'm representative of most people. Maybe they are. But let's just say that I am. And maybe it just makes sense that when I'm within 100 pixels of, when my mouse cursor is within 100 pixels of that button, that you go out and you pull in the JavaScript that makes that button work. And, you know, on demand is basically a wide open area. You can use any trigger that you want to start loading stuff in. So if you want to go back to the type ahead or autocomplete, maybe you decide that that's actually like the fourth or fifth thing that people do. And so you want to wait until somebody sets focus into the search box before you start to download the JavaScript to pull in all of those suggestions. It's completely up to you, but it does require that you understand what your users are doing when they come to that page. Mm-hmm. You can't actually do this until you have the analytics and the data that says, I know these are the things that people need to do when they come, or the people do soon after coming, and then organizing your JavaScript based on that.
So it sounds like there's just the knowledge that you could do that is like really powerful. I mean, I think there's probably people who are listening who are going, gosh, you know, we do load 4K of JavaScript for our reviews. I never even thought about events that I could use to kick that off. And you're saying measure that to make sure, like, it would be a micro optimization if you had no idea whether or not this was used by 1 in 100 users or 99 out of 100 users.
Exactly.
Okay. That's interesting. You know, it seems like you could do an entire talk just about these kind of optimizations and help people make that decision about, is this a premature or micro optimization? Like, is 4K a JavaScript worth it? Is that big of a deal? I mean, how much is too much, or how much is too little, rather, if I'm going to go and load functionality like that? Like, the product zoom one seems like significant. That could be quite a bit of JavaScript.
Yeah, I think it's the typical death by 1,000 paper cuts scenario, is that you look at any one thing and you say, that's probably not going to make a big enough difference. Mm-hmm. But if you start to find a bunch of those small things altogether, like maybe there are 20 things on your page that are each 4K that only like 10% of your users ever use. Okay, well, that's 80K that you can trim off by choosing to load those on demand or even just after onload if you don't want to go that far. And so I rarely found when I was working with companies that there was one significant thing that was a problem. It was usually a sequence of several things that when you added them together ended up being the real problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. You could probably do an entire talk on how do you balance that? How do you find it? What I loved being a consultant was sometimes there was something so glaring that could make a difference that people basically felt like they had got their money's worth within the first few hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I had one client who had both YUI 2 and jQuery on the page at the same time. And the only reason that they had YUI 2 on the page was because they wanted to use the YUI 2 autocomplete. And so for that, the total size of the JavaScript that they needed for that autocomplete was over 250K. Just for that piece of functionality that when I asked them how frequently that was being used, they weren't entirely sure. And so I looked really smart by saying, well, why don't you replace that, 250 plus K of YUI2 and autocomplete with this 40K jQuery version? And you don't have to change anything else, right? You're just eliminating over 200K right from that.
Mm-hmm.
They thought I was great for that. Unfortunately, a lot of the other cases that I went into, there wasn't something that glaring and obvious. It was just really taking inventory of, okay, what's going on this page? What are the user expectations? What do we know that they're doing? And how can we be a little bit smarter about when we're loading this stuff?
Mm-hmm. In the remaining few minutes, talk to me about this idea that people aren't putting enough data and metadata and context in their HTML. You gave this great example where there's some tabs and you're just using JavaScript to basically initialize a bunch of state. Is this tab selected or what's going on here? And you can remove JavaScript by adding more HTML to a solution. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, I think that HTML ends up being like the uncool older sibling of JavaScript and CSS, where people kind of tolerate it, but they don't really want to deal with it all that much. And I think that's unfortunate because it represents a great opportunity to offload information. But one of the things that has always frustrated me about JavaScript widgets that work with the DOM is that they end up setting up what I call a shadow object. It's basically an object that mimics and tracks the UI state. So the state that's actually already in the DOM, you also have something sitting over in JavaScript land that is mimicking that information. So maybe you added a class of selected onto a tab, and then over in JavaScript land, you have selected tab index is 1. And those two things actually mean the exact same thing. There's no difference. But over in JavaScript land, you have this object that you're referencing all the time, and then you have to synchronize to the DOM. And what a lot of people don't realize is that you already have this data structure in the browser that the browser creates for you called the DOM. And you can make use of that instead of creating these shadow objects that are just mimicking it. So what I like to do is take anything that is related to the UI state and put it specifically into the DOM, like into the elements that you're talking about. And then all you need to do when you want to get that information is you have the element that you're interested in and you say, hey, element, tell me what I want to know. As opposed to the way that a lot of JavaScript libraries act, which is, we're going to hack some ID onto this element. And then that ID is going to be in like a hash table in the JavaScript. And we're going to look that up and figure out what the element is and then all of the other metadata for it. Say, why even bother? When you click on an element, you have the element there. Just let that element tell you everything that there is to know about its current state. And that way you can avoid creating that shadow object in JavaScript, which means less memory, less chance for you to create memory leaks. And you get to be a little more flexible because that allows you to spend more time tinkering in HTML, which is a lot harder to create a catastrophe in than JavaScript. And spend less time in the JavaScript as you're developing. Because JavaScript is the most complicated part of the client side. And we do end up spending most of our time in it as a web app develops over time. And so why not minimize that as much as possible and let HTML do some of the heavy lifting? Because it's not actually a performance hit to do that. It's a common misconception. I got that a lot after my talk where people were saying, but you're storing all of this stuff in the DOM, but isn't touching the DOM itself just very slow? And what they don't realize is that the DOM is fundamentally just a data structure. And it's a structure that ends up getting painted onto the screen. The part that's slow is when you do something to change what's painted on the screen. But if you are just saying, does this data structure have this attribute? Or does this data structure have this class? All you're doing is querying data, which is actually pretty fast.
Right, it's in memory. I mean, the DOM isn't some distant database that we're calling select star from something on.
Exactly, and it's not automatically a performance penalty every time you do something with the DOM.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, enough with the JavaScript already. That is the name of your talk, and we get up on SlideShare. I'm going to put links to that in the show notes, and people can follow Nicholas at Twitter. His name is SlickNet. And check out Box, which is where Nicholas works. Thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.